Arnold Bax, Vernon Hanley with the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. I'm Kevin O'Connor. It's yourclassical.org.
Listener-supported non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. It is time for Radio Vault. You knew that, right? This is the time I usually go over the menu. And today is no exception. I was going to bring you a Lux Radio Theater episode today, but couldn't get it to sound exactly the way it needed to sound. So we came up with a couple of Jack Benny shows that I don't believe you have ever heard. We'll get to those during our third hour. In just a moment, we will hear the Great Gildersleeve and the Sadie Hawkins Dance episode from 1950. We will also hear from Eve Arden, Eunice Queens, as Our Miss Brooks from 1949. Got a couple of unusual shows we're going to bring you, somewhat seasonal. A show called Box Office. And they had a Memorial Day program back in 1942. And another show called Command Performance that was primarily for the Armed Forces troops. But there were certain shows that got broadcast domestically. So we'll hear Command Performance and an episode from 1944. In which Jack Benny appears, along with Deanna Durbin, who is the actual host of the show. Jack wasn't real happy about her taking over as host, but we'll hear that when we get to it, all right? And then, as promised, the Jack Benny Show from 1955, we'll hear the two last episodes from the radio series. We'll hear the episode where he paints the house and meets a friend at the station. And then the very last episode where he has trouble with his sound man Twombly. As interesting as that was. But they presented this as their last show, but they thought they were coming back for another season. Jack says at the end, "See you in the fall." But that fall show never came. He was on television, but the radio show was canceled after that. After how many decades on the air? Since the early 30s. So that's it. Jack Benny, we'll have two of those episodes during our third hour. Middle hour, Box Office and Command Performance. And then for this hour, the Great Gildersleeve and our Miss Brooks. So if you're ready, I think I'm ready to go back to May 31st, 1950.
Leroy, Carol Perry as the Great Gildersleeve. The Great Gildersleeve is brought to you by the Kraft Foods Company. There's a new day dawning in Summerfield, bright and clear. Skies are blue, birds are on the wing. It's going to be a wonderful day. Yes, sir, it's bound to be, because the Great Gildersleeve is coming down to breakfast this morning with a smile on his face and a song in his heart.
There's a rainbow round my shoulder, and the skies are blue above. La-da-dee, la-da-dee. Well, good morning, little family.
Good morning, Unky.
Leroy, aren't you going to say good morning to your old uncle?
Can't. Got egg in my mouth.
Well, take your time. There's some more on your face. What an appetite.
Morning, Miss Gildersleeve.
Well, morning, Bertie. I'm really hungry this morning. I could eat a couple of horses.
Yes, sir. How do you have them, fried or scrambled? Yeah.
Sunny side up. I can make jokes, too. Everybody's in such a good humor this morning.
Well, you're feeling pretty grand yourself, Unky.
Yeah, what happened?
Oh, nothing happened. Simply my usual frame of mind, Leroy, on a fine summer morning.
I'll bet I know, Unky. You were dreaming about Miss Milford last night.
Catherine, nah.
You were talking in your sleep, Unc.
Oh, well, I was probably just trying to get comfortable, talking to my pillow.
You got a pillow named Sweetheart?
Yep. Leroy. By the way, what happened to the bridegroom? Where's Bronco?
Oh, he left early this morning. He had to get down at the real estate office. He's really working.
Yeah, he's got a hot prospect.
What an eager beaver, chasing hot prospects before breakfast.
Here's your tomato juice, Mr. Gildersleeve, in the morning paper.
I think I'll drink the juice first, Bertie.
Well, I'll take the paper, Unky.
What a way to read the paper. She always looks for the society page.
Well, girls like that sort of thing. Pass the salt, please, Leroy.
Society. Susie Snort, Plight's Trough.
The salt, please, Leroy.
Mamie Mop Handle, Plight's Trough.
The salt, Leroy.
Why do they always say they're Plight in a trough?
Leroy, the salt.
Why don't they say they're getting married?
Leroy?
Yeah?
The salt.
Is that what you wanted?
Oh, my goodness.
Here's something interesting, Uncle Morris.
Oh, what is it, my dear?
The nursing staff at the hospital is giving a dance Saturday night.
Well, good.
Has Catherine asked you to take her, Unky?
Asked me?
Well, sure, it's a Sadie Hawkins dance. You know, where the girls invite the boys. Well, it's a lot of fun. She'll have to call you up and ask you for a date.
Ask me for a date? Hey, that's quite an idea.
You better get busy, Unc. She's liable to ask Dr. Olson instead of you.
Yeah, don't you worry about your old uncle, my boy.
Hasn't she asked her yet, Unky?
Well, not yet, Marjorie. Give her time. Still early. The dance doesn't come off until Saturday night. As far as Dr. Olson is concerned, she wouldn't ask him. Not a chance.
I don't know.
Me either. He's got a car with two exhaust pipes.
And he's got ears with no lobes, too, Leroy. And if you're finished with your breakfast, why don't you go out and play? Have fun.
It's fun here.
Gee, Unky, I remember before I was married...
Before I was married? She's been waiting to say that.
Well, seriously, Unky, if there was a dance on Saturday night and I hadn't been asked for a date, I'd be worried.
Well, my dear, that's the difference that experience makes. If Catherine calls and asks me for a date Saturday night, well and good, I may accept. If she doesn't call, I won't even think about it.
But how can you be so unconcerned?
As I said, experience, my dear. Nothing attracts a woman quite so much as a man who simply doesn't care.
Well, you're right, Unky.
Absolutely. There's the phone.
I'll get it!
I'll get it, Bertie. I'll get it. It's probably Catherine. I mean, probably for me.
Holy cow, look at him go.
Hello. Oh, Bronco. Yeah, she's here.
It's for you, Marjorie, your husband.
Thanks, Unky.
Now, you finish your breakfast, Leroy. I'm going to work.
Through the kitchen?
Well, I'm going to get some matches to light my cigars while I'm at the office.
I just wondered.
Pinkerton man. Bertie.
Your bacon and eggs coming right up, Mr. Gillsleeve.
Bacon and eggs? Oh, yes, breakfast. Well, I wasn't thinking about that exactly, Bertie. I was wondering if we ever returned that pie tin to Miss Milford's mother.
Pie tin?
I could stop by Miss Milford's on the way to the office and drop it off. Where is it, Bertie?
Oh, I took that back last week.
Oh, you did, eh? Well, isn't there something we have of theirs that should be returned? A cookbook, maybe?
Oh, Mr. Gillsleeve, if you're going by Miss Milford's, you don't want to take her no pie tin or cookbook. You could take her some flowers.
Flowers?
How about some of them roses in the backyard?
Hey, that's not a bad idea, Bertie.
If there's one thing a girl always likes to get, it's roses.
Yeah, that's right, Bertie.
A girl don't care nothing about pie tins or cookbooks.
I know, Bertie.
A girl likes to get roses.
Yes, Bertie.
Girls don't like pie tins or cookbooks.
All right, Bertie.
Mr. Gilsey, you know what a girl likes?
Yes, Bertie.
That's right. A girl likes to get roses.
All right, Bertie. Gather a bunch of them. Leroy, where are the snippers? Catherine should love these roses. Awful lot of them, though. I asked Bertie for a bunch, and I got a whole armful. I feel like a bridesmaid. Well, the more the better. If I sent a rose to you for every time you made me blue, you'd have a room full of Catherine.
Well, Throckmorton. It is Throckmorton, isn't it?
Yeah, it's me.
I wasn't sure at first. I just got a glimpse of you through the leaves.
I brought you a couple of roses, Catherine.
Oh, they're beautiful. Thank you.
Just going by. Thought I'd stop in and say hello.
Well, how nice.
Yeah. Isn't it a lovely day?
Is it?
Sure. Lovely day to stop and see a lovely lady.
Oh, Throckmorton, I'm not even awake yet.
My sleeping beauty.
Really? Throckmorton, right now I'm just a tired nurse with aching feet.
You look more like a princess to me. A princess waiting for a prince to come along with a little glass slipper.
All right, if you say so.
The reason I stopped in, our little telephone was busy quite a while last night.
Oh?
Yeah, I thought you might have tried to call. I can't imagine for what reason.
No, I didn't try to call.
Well, good. Wouldn't want you to call and get a busy signal.
Oh, there's my phone. Probably Dr. Olson calling from the hospital.
How do you know I was here? He must have been following me with radar.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing.
Excuse me, Throckmorton?
Well, it's all right. I'll see you later, Catherine.
Oh, well, goodbye, and thanks for the flowers.
You're welcome. If I sent a rose to you for every time you made me blue.
Hi, Unc.
Leroy, what are you doing here?
Just scouting around. Any luck?
Oh, for... Leroy, why don't you mind your own business?
I don't have any business.
Well, go find some.
Did she ask you to the dance?
Oh, my God. Leroy, I'm not even thinking about that. I can't understand why you and your sister expect me to act like some giddy high school girl waiting for the phone to ring. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'll get it, Leroy.
Make mine vanilla, Unc. That's the good humor man.
Good morning, Bessie.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Gildersleeve. How are you this morning?
I'm glad to hear it, Bessie.
Yes, sir. What?
What do you mean, what?
Well, I said, how are you this morning? And you said, I'm glad to hear it. Is that right?
Bessie, what are you talking about?
Well, you came in and... Mr. Gildersleeve, you confuse me.
Bessie, that's not possible. What's the matter with everybody this morning? All going around in circles.
Well, I'm all right, I think.
Why do they have to put bells like that on ice cream wagons?
Bells? I don't hear any bells.
What's that?
Bells.
I don't hear any bells.
Mr. Gildersleeve, you just... Well, that is when you... Well...
Bessie, how do you feel this morning?
I don't know.
Ooh, what an office. Bring me the mail, Bessie.
Yes, sir. Just as soon as the postman brings it.
Have there been any calls, Bessie?
Telephone?
Who's it for?
What?
Bessie, the phone didn't even ring.
What phone?
Oh, my goodness. You are going around in circles this morning.
Yes, sir.
Morning, Bessie. Is the water commissioner in?
Oh, yes, I think he's in. He's in his office.
Come on in, Judge.
Well, good morning, Gilda. How's the water department this morning? Is everything H2O?
What a combination. An old goat with jokes.
Now, Gilda.
All right, Judge. Relax. Sit down.
Thank you. What are you going to wear at the dance Saturday night, Gilda?
What dance?
Good gracious, Gilda. The hospital dance. Hasn't Catherine asked you yet?
Well, not exactly, Judge.
Miss Matterhorn, head nurse in maternity, called me night before last. She's very cute, Gilda.
Yes, yes.
Drives an adorable car.
I'll bet. I can imagine. Probably a hard-top Stutz.
Gilda, the dance is Saturday night. Do you suppose Miss Milford's dating somebody else?
Judge, I'm not the least bit interested. It's the silliest thing I ever heard of. Grown men like yourself twittering around like sorority girls waiting for a date. Tss.
Well, of course, I don't blame you for being a little sore since Catherine hasn't called you.
Not it at all, Judge. A lot of things more important than a Saturday night dance.
Oh, of course.
There's the phone, Bessie. Answer it.
Expecting a call, Gilda.
Don't be so nosy, Judge.
It's for you, Mr. Gildersleeve. It's Miss Milford.
Well, Catherine, I told you she'd call, Judge.
Hello,
Catherine.
Hello, Throckmorton.
How are you?
Fine.
Well, good.
Throckmorton, there was something I wanted to ask you.
Really? You ought to hear this, Judge. She's going to ask me for a date.
Let me listen, Gildy.
Go away, Judge. Yes, Catherine?
I forgot to mention this to you when you were here this morning.
Oh, that's all right. What is it, Catherine?
Our water heater is leaking. Could you send a man out to fix it?
Zeke.
What did you say, Throckmorton?
I'm just thinking. I could do it. I'd be happy to.
This evening?
Sure.
Would you, Throckmorton?
Certainly love to.
All right. Don't forget your overalls.
Oh, sure, I'll bring overalls. See you then.
Bye.
What did she say, Gildy?
Well,
I heard you say you were going to bring overalls, an ideal costume for a Sadie Hawkins party. I'll bet you got an invitation.
Well, yes, Judge, I did, sort of.
Good for you, Gildy. Now you and Catherine and Miss Matterhorn and I can have a jolly foursome. My, won't we kick up our heels?
Now, wait a minute.
I'll see you later, Gildy. I have to go down and buy some dancing pumps.
Yeah. All right, Horace. What's the difference? Let him think I have a date. Won't do any harm. He's so happy. I wish I was.
We'll return to the great Gildersleeve's problem in just a moment. Now let's get back to the great Gildersleeve. Right now, the water commissioner has something on his mind, and it's not water.
George, I'm not going to let a little thing like a dance bother me. Catherine doesn't want to ask me to go. All right. She wants to ask that sneaky intern, Dr. Olson. That's her business. Not even going to think about it. I wonder why she hasn't called. Bertie!
Oh,
Oh, that you, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yeah, I thought I'd get home a little early for dinner tonight. Anybody call, Bertie?
No, sir, no calls.
No calls, eh?
No, sir.
Anybody stop by?
No, sir, nobody stopped by.
Nobody stopped by, huh?
No, sir.
Just wondered.
Yes, sir.
Well, guess I'll sit down and read the paper till dinner's ready.
Miss Gilfley?
Yes, Bertie?
You got the paper upside down.
Why?
Oh. Thank you, Bertie.
Yes.
Hello, Unky.
Hello, Margie.
Any word from Miss Milford?
Miss Milford? Catherine? About what, Margie?
Well, you know, Unky, about the dance.
Oh, that. Completely slipped my mind.
She didn't even call you at the office?
Well, no, I guess she didn't. I've been pretty busy all day.
Uncle Mort, how can you be so casual about it? I should think you'd be going out of your mind.
Me? No. As I said this morning, my dear, the only way to keep a woman interested is to pay no attention to her.
Well, I thought possibly Miss Milford called you at the office. There was somebody using our line all afternoon.
There was? She might have tried to call here later this afternoon.
What, Unky?
Just mumbling, my dear. Going over to Miss Milford's this evening to fix the water heater. Probably get it all straightened out then. Sure. Not that it makes any difference to me, of course.
Of course not.
Hi, Unky.
Hello, Leroy.
Any luck?
Leroy?
I'm just interested, Unc.
Yes, yes.
It's like a baseball game. I want to see who's going to win.
Baseball game. Tell Bertie I'll be back in time for dinner, children. I'm going to run down to Peavy's drugstore for a minute.
Well, dinner's almost ready, Unky.
Oh, well, I suppose I can go later.
When I was coming home just now, I saw Miss Milford going into the drugstore.
You did? On second thought, I guess I'll take a quick run down there.
You better hurry, Unc. She might leave before you get there.
Leroy, that's not why I'm going.
Then what are you so excited about?
Who's excited? Simply because I want to run down to a dance to pick up a drugstore? I mean, get a cigar for Catherine? Oh! Where's my hat?
On your head.
What's it doing there? See you later. Hello, Peavy.
Hello, Mr. Gildersleeve. What can I do for you this evening? You looking for somebody, Mr. Gildersleeve?
What? Oh, no, Peavy. I'm just browsing around.
Well, if you're looking for Miss Milford, she isn't behind the telephone booth.
I wasn't looking for Miss Milford.
What were you looking for?
Nothing, Peavy. I was just looking around.
See anything interesting?
No.
Miss Milford was in about 5 minutes ago, but she left.
Oh? Well, it doesn't make any difference. I'm going over to her house tonight anyway. Better give me a box of those assorted chocolates, Peavy.
Very well.
Not the dusty one, Peavy.
How's this?
Well, I guess that'll do.
I understand the nurses at the hospital are holding a big dance Saturday night. Sadie Hawkins party, I believe it is.
Yeah, that's right.
The girls are inviting the men.
What's so funny about that, Peavy?
Nothing, except my cigar business has dropped off a lot the last couple of days, especially with the bachelors.
Why is that?
They're all sitting home by the telephone.
Oh.
Waiting for a ring, a ting, a ring.
Ring a ting, a ling. Well, maybe some of your customers are waiting to be invited to that dance, Peavy, but not me.
Yes, I know. Judge Hooker was in. He told me you'd been invited.
What?
Yes, he said Miss Milford had asked you to go with her.
I know, but...
That's what you told him, wasn't it?
Yes, but...
Miss Milford's a very attractive girl.
Peavy, you didn't say anything about it to Miss Milford, did you?
Well, yes, I told her I'd heard that she had invited you to go to the dance.
Oh, my goodness.
Anything wrong, Miss
Milford? Peavy, why did you have to open your big mouth? What did she do?
Well, she bought a lipstick.
What did she say?
She asked Dr. Olson how he liked the shade of the lipstick.
Dr. Olson? Peavy, why didn't you tell me he was with her?
You didn't ask me.
What did Dr. Olson say?
He said, you're beautiful in any shade of lipstick.
He said that to her?
Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, he wouldn't say it to me.
See you later, Peavy. tell the judge Catherine had invited me. The old blabbermouth. And Peavy telling Catherine. Gildersleeve, you put your big foot in it this time.
Hello, Gilder. Wait for me.
Oh, there's the judge again. Wish I could hide someplace. No, it's too late.
Oh, I'm glad I caught up with you, Gilder. I want to talk to you about Saturday night.
Not now, Judge. I've got a lot of important things on my mind.
Oh, but Gilder, business can wait. Let's live. We're only young once.
Yeah, and I'm getting older by the minute.
We'll all go in Miss Matterhorn's car. It's a two-seater.
Two-seater?
You and Miss Milford can sit in the back seat going to the dance, and Miss Matterhorn and I will occupy the back seat going home. I think that's only fair, Gildy, since it's Miss Matterhorn's car.
Yes, yes.
Going to be jolly, Gildy. The rear view mirror has been conveniently removed.
Please, Judge, isn't there something you have to do? Someplace you have to be? Aren't you late for an appointment?
Gildy, I have only one appointment that matters. 8 o'clock, Saturday night.
Oh, how do you tie a can to an old goat?
I have my wardrobe all laid out. It's a Sadie Hawkins dance, so I'm wearing blue jeans and my green cape.
Oh, brother.
Miss Matterhorn is going to find me irresistible. I'm going to put Sen Sen in my Kalak water.
That does it. I've got to go, Judge.
Well, I'm going in the same direction, Gilda.
I know, but I'm going faster than you are.
Hello, Unky. We're waiting dinner for you.
You children go ahead and eat. I'm not very hungry.
Hi, Unc.
Hello, Leroy.
Any luck?
Right. Go to the table, Leroy.
But, gee, I'm curious.
Never mind.
Aren't you going to eat anything, Unky?
No, my dear, I've lost my appetite.
Dinner's on, Mr. Gilsley.
I think I'll skip dinner tonight, Bertie.
You going over to Miss Milford's to fix the water heater?
Water heater? I forgot about that.
You look tired, Unky. Do you think you should go tonight?
It's not a question if I should. It's do I dare to.
What do you mean?
Nothing, my dear. Where are my overalls, Bertie? Get the pipe wrench, Leroy.
You going, Unky?
Yeah. We all have to go sometime. I'll go tonight. Say to Catherine when she opens the door. What can I say? Can't just stand there like a big oaf. Maybe I could. What am I going to tell her? Could tell her the truth. No, not that. I don't know, though. Why not? Tell her exactly what happened. Make a clean breast of the whole thing. By George, that's precisely what I'm going to do. Confess everything. I don't know why my knees are shaking. What am I afraid of? Catherine, that little tiny girl. But she's so pretty.
Who is it? Oh, Throckmorton, it's you.
Yeah, it's me, Catherine.
Won't you come in?
Come in? Oh, yes. Thank you.
I hope you'll forgive me for being so dull when you stopped by this morning, Throckmorton.
Dull? You?
Oh. I've been working night and day all week at the hospital. I'm simply walking around in a fog.
No, you're not. Catherine, I want to explain about...
Throckmorton, why are you wearing overalls? The dance isn't until Saturday night.
Dance?
I hope I didn't tell you the wrong day.
What?
Oh, I was so worried. I thought I'd called you and asked you about the nurse's dance Saturday night, and then I wasn't sure.
You thought you'd called? Yeah?
I didn't want to call you back and ask if I'd call.
Naturally.
You would have thought I was stupid.
Sure. I mean, no.
I'm going to be perfectly truthful, Throckmorton. I didn't know if I'd called you or not. And it was Mr. Peavy who saved my life.
Mr. Peavy?
He told me that Judge Hooker had told him that you had told Judge Hooker that I had asked you to the dance.
Those two fine old men.
Now I've confessed.
Well, little Catherine. Come here.
Oh, Throckmorton. Oh, now I remember why you're wearing the overalls. The water heater is leaking.
Let it leak. Catherine, what a girl. What a wonderful day this has been.
Hi,
Unc. Hello, Leroy.
Any luck?
You bet, my boy. Lots of luck.
Atta boy, Unc.
Yes, sir. Come on, Leroy. Let's go home.
Okay. But first, can I say something?
Certainly, my boy. What is it?
Well, our scoutmaster asked if we'd tell everybody to be extra careful with matches and stuff when we're out in the woods this summer.
Oh?
Do everything we can to prevent forest fires. Be real careful. Everybody.
Very good, Leroy. We'll all be especially careful. Good night, folks. See you all next week.
The Great Gildersleeve is played by Harold Perry. The show was written by Paul West, Don Elliott, and Andy White, with music by Jack Meekin. Included in the cast are Walter Tetley, Mary Lee Robb, Lillian Randolph, Kathy Lewis, Gloria Holliday, Earl Ross, and Dick LeGrand. This is Jay Stewart saying goodnight for the Kraft Foods Company. Be sure to listen in next Wednesday and every Wednesday for the further adventures of The Great Gildersleeve.
Now join the excitement of Break the Bank on NBC.
It's good to be back here in Cleveland. For over three decades, the Bop Stop has served as the home of jazz in Cleveland, featuring everyone from up-and-coming local talent to the legends of jazz. I'm Daniel Peck. Join Gabe Pollock and me weekly as we bring you an hour of live jazz on Live at the Bop Stop.
But people around the country know how great a club this is.
It's Live at the Bop Stop, Sunday afternoons at 2, starting June 1st on WHFR, Making Waves.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. The daily problems of most teachers are not restricted to the ones they face at school. Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, is no exception to this rule.
No, indeed. Many of my problems don't begin until I leave school, or before I start to school. This, in spite of the fact that my home life consists of just A, my landlady, Mrs. Davis, and B, our cat, Minerva. Unfortunately, A is extremely absent-minded, and B is allergic to cat hair. Last Friday morning, the three of us were having breakfast together.
Careful, dear. Don't drink so fast or you'll get milk all over you.
Thanks for reminding me, Mrs. Davis. May I have that napkin, please?
Oh, here you are, Connie. You look pretty silly with your whiskers all white.
Well, who wouldn't? Oh, you're talking to Minerva.
Yes. All finished, Minerva.
Meow.
Oh. There's a good girl. Now go on into the kitchen and wait for me.
Meow.
While you're out there, do the dishes.
Meow, meow.
All right, I'll do the dishes.
Don't bother, Connie. You better get ready to go to school. Walter Denton should be picking you up any minute. Of course, you could dust the living room for me if you've got a minute. Those andirons I bought yesterday are pretty dusty.
Andirons? But Mrs. Davis, we haven't got a fireplace.
That's what I told the salesman, Connie. But he'd carried them all the way up to our door by then.
From where?
From his car. He said it was his first time in this neighborhood.
A door-to-door andiron salesman. Well, that's a new wrinkle.
Yes, he was, Connie. And rather gray, too. That's why I just had to buy them. You'll find the set over by the piano. There's a brush and a sifter came with them.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's burn the piano. I'm sorry, Mrs. Davis. What you buy is your own business, but I don't like to see people take advantage of you all the time.
But, Connie, nobody takes advantage of me.
Certainly they do. You're always doing favors for somebody. And most of the time, they're practically strangers. Like that night you consented to sit for that couple down the street. You sat all right till 5 a.m.
But they couldn't find anybody else to stay with their children.
A fine litter it was, too. 2 sets of twins, 8 months old and 2 years old.
Oh, it wasn't so bad. They had a lovely phonograph, and I listened to music all evening long. It had a record changer and everything.
You probably set a few changing records yourself that night. Mrs. Davis, you've just got to learn how to say no to people. Oh.
I guess I'm just an easy mark. Well, I'll get on with these dishes.
Oh, that's probably Walter now. Coming! Yes?
Miss Brooks, isn't it? I'm a neighbor of yours, Mrs. Evans. George and I live about 1 mile from here.
Are you asking me or telling me? come in, neighbor.
Oh, thank you.
Come into the living room. Sit down, Mrs. Evans?
Oh, you still don't know who I am, do you? Let's see. Belmont Laundry. Does that do anything to you?
Well, they tear my slips once in a while.
Oh, I knew that would do it. It is good to chat with you again, Miss Brooks.
Again? When did you chat with me last, Mrs. Evans?
Right after the holiday.
The Easter holiday?
No, dear. Last Thanksgiving. We were both at the Belmont Laundry to complain about the service. And on the way out, we had a conversation. I said, isn't this laundry getting terrible? And you agreed with me. Now, do you remember?
Of course. I just forgot some of the details.
Forgive me if I'm brief, Miss Brooks. I've been rather upset lately. It's George.
It is?
Yes, my husband, he isn't a bit well, and that's why we have to make this trip. The doctor seems to think that a week in the country will do him a world of good, so we're going upstate this afternoon. Molly has a farm up there, you know. It's a beautiful place.
If there's one thing Molly knows, it's how to pick a farm.
Oh, but she didn't pick it. Uncle Fred left it to Molly. But George is so attached to peanuts. And, well, Miss Brooks, for just this 1 week, will you take care of peanuts for us?
Well, it's all according. How many bags of them are there?
No, you don't understand. Peanuts is our dog, the cutest thing you ever saw. And he's no trouble at all. I've got him right outside my station wagon. Come on out and take a look at him.
We'll
take him with us, but Molly's afraid of dogs. Come on, Miss Brooks.
The Lunar Activities Committee of the Motion Picture
yes,
Industry
I see.
In collaboration with
Who's
the United
at the
States
wheel, your husband?
No, that's Peanuts.
Oh, did he drive you down? I mean, what kind of a dog is that, Mrs. Evans?
He's a Dane, of course.
I should have known. He's built just like Lawrence Melchior. How can he get out? The windows are closed.
Well, he opens the door with his teeth. We taught him how when he was just a little puppy, and he's never forgotten it. He's got a wonderful memory.
He should have. His father was an elephant.
Where are you going, Miss Brooks?
I left a crossword puzzle up this tree.
Don't be afraid. He likes you. You see, he wants to make friends. He's talking to you.
Does he talk like that to all his friends?
Come on, Peanuts. There's the good boy. Give Miss Brooks your paw, Peanut.
No, thanks. I've got a couple. Mrs. Evans, I don't think we
can... Well, let's go in the house now so I can give you a few last-minute instructions. Come on, Peanut. You might as well get used to your new home. You're going to be here for a week.
Oh, but Mrs. Evans, I can't accept the responsibility for a dog this size. Besides, this isn't my house. I just rent a room here. Mrs. Davis owns the place, and she couldn't possibly have a dog that...
Well, I finished the dishes, Connie, and... Oh, I didn't know you had company. Who are these folks, Connie?
These folks, Mrs. Davis, are Mrs. Evans and her dog, Peanuts.
How do you do?
So we meet again, Mrs. Davis.
Again?
We all take from the same laundry.
Miss Brooks here how little trouble Peanuts is around the house. He's really a lap dog, you know, but he doesn't require any special attention whatsoever. He'll eat some of whatever you eat, get up when you get up, and go to sleep when you go to sleep.
I hope he's got his own toothbrush. Look, Mrs. Evans, this cottage belongs to Mrs. Davis, and it's up to her to...
Oh, don't think about me, Connie. If you want this lovely dog, please take him.
Good night, all.
Oh. Thank you, Miss Brooks. And you won't be sorry. Peanuts is loads of fun. Well, I'd better be running along now.
Oh, but where do we get in touch with
you
if Peanuts has...
Well, you won't have to get in touch with us. We'll contact you as soon as we return from the farm. Goodbye, my dear.
Now you've done it, Mrs. Davis.
I've done it. Why, Connie, Mrs. Evans is your friend.
My friend? I only met her once in my life.
Well, it's done now, Connie. Might as well make the best of it. By the way, where is the dog?
He's probably in the kitchen. The door is ajar.
Well, that's funny. I left it closed.
He opens it with his teeth. They taught him when he was a puppy. Come on.
There was a whole leg of lamb on the stove, Connie.
Well, that's right, Mrs. Davis.
Peanuts, you didn't eat that whole leg of lamb.
Davis, we can't afford to feed this dog. Not if we want to eat, too.
Oh, that's Walter Denton, Connie. Shall I answer it?
No, I'll let Walter in. Walter, say, he hasn't got a dog of his own, has he?
Not that I know of, Connie.
A kid like that? I bet he loved the idea of taking care of Peanuts for a week. His folks have a big backyard, too. It'd be just the thing. Coming, Walter! Now, whatever you do, Mrs. Davis, keep the dog out of sight until I've prepared him. Well, Walter Denton. Come in, Walter. Come in.
Oh, thanks, Miss Brooks. I'd have been here sooner, but I was dog-tired this morning.
That's a coincidence. Walter, who would you say is a fella's best friend next to his mother?
Stretch Snodgrass. Well, he's mine anyway. Why, Miss Brooks?
I mean in the animal kingdom, Walter. Who is man's best friend?
Well, out west, they say a horse is.
Right. And next to a horse?
A dog, I guess.
Right again, Walter. Now, what would you do if you could get an animal combining the best features of both?
I don't get it, Miss Brooks.
You will, Walter. For 1 week, I'm offering you absolutely free of charge the opportunity to look after, play with, and be a pal to a wonderful creature named Peanuts.
Peanuts? Oh, where is he?
Right in the kitchen. A friend of mine left him here, but... Well, when I thought of how much bigger your backyard is, I just couldn't help it. I knew I'd have to make the sacrifice. Call him, Walter. Call Peanuts.
Well, if you say so, Miss Brooks. Peanuts! Here, Peanuts!
Walter, come down off that piano. He wouldn't hurt a fly.
I'm not worried about his reaction to flies, Miss Brooks. Are you sure he won't bite?
Positive. Come on now, just pet him. He likes you, Walter. Now, give him your paw, boy. Go on. Give him your paw. Not you, Walter.
Say, he's all right. Oh, but I couldn't take him home even for a week, Miss Brooks. My folks have started a garden out in the back.
A garden?
Yeah, that's why I haven't got my own dog right now.
Oh, I wish I knew what to do with him. Frankly, Walter, I just can't afford to feed him for a week.
I've got an idea. How about leaving him at Snodgrass's pet shop? You know, Stretch's old man. He's got all kinds of animals down there, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind.
Perfect, Walter. Then when Mrs. Evans comes back, she can pay his food bill. Come on, Peanut. Oh, just one thing, Walter. I'd better drive today. You can sit in back with Peanuts.
In back? But there isn't room back here for both of us, Miss Brooks.
Sure there is. He's a lap dog, Walter. You can sit in his lap.
Well, here's the pet shop, Miss Brooks. We can... Oh, golly, I forgot.
What?
It's closed. Stretch told me his pop was going away for the weekend.
Oh, that's just dandy. Now we'll have to take Peanuts to school.
To school? But, Miss Brooks, Mr. Conklin doesn't allow dogs at school. If he saw Peanuts, he'd blow his top.
Our beloved principal will just have to make an exception, Walter. Besides, this dog is completely outside of Mr. Conklin's jurisdiction.
Well, what do you mean, Miss Brooks?
He happens to be a Danish citizen.
Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment.
In spite of my enforced bravado, I was pretty squeamish about getting Peanuts into school without Mr. Conklin finding out about it. Fortunately, we were early, and while Walter parked his car, I was able to hustle the dog into the supply room with a minimum of incident. Of course, a few students we did encounter in the halls will spend the remainder of their adolescence with hanging jaws and bulging eyes, but that was unavoidable. Stretch Snodgrass, Madison's star athlete, known to the faculty as the body beautiful and the head empty, was in charge of the supply room when Peanuts and I arrived.
Hi, Miss Brooks.
Quiet, quiet. This is Peanuts, Stretch.
Oh, I didn't notice him. Nice pooch.
Pooch? But you're not seeing him at his best, Stretch. He usually carries a barrel around his neck with a St. Bernard in it. Stretch, we've got to keep him out of sight. Mr. Conklin mustn't find out that he's in school.
Oh, he won't. Mr. Conklin's at the doctor's office. Harriet told me when she gave me the key to this supply room. Her father's getting tested for
allergies?
Yeah. He won't be in for an hour yet. Harriet said she talked to him on the phone, and he's half shot.
Translation. He's only through with half the shots the doctor's giving him.
Yeah. But don't worry about Peanuts, Miss Brooks. I'll keep him right here in the supply room. Oh, look, Miss Brooks. He's scratching his own back. Isn't it cute? He smiles while he does it.
Don't you? I wonder what he's got back there.
Well, it's probably just a mild case of hives.
Well, it's certainly clever the way he takes the hives with one paw and beats them to death with the other.
You'll make a great watchdog if I have to leave this place for anything. Can you imagine what a gag it'd be if somebody just wandered in to snitch a pencil or something?
Yeah, a great gag. They'd probably get hysterical permanently.
I've sent for you, Miss Brooks, because I feel that you, of all the personnel at Madison, can keep a cool and level head in time of crisis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Conklin, but
To be calm myself, Miss Brooks. And I shall make every effort to acquaint you with the facts in as brief and concise a manner as is possible.
Yes, sir.
First of all, I returned from the doctor's office about an hour ago. Some allergy shots. I was jotting down some possible prizes for the community chest raffle and found myself in need of another notebook.
Yes, Mr. Conklin?
Pending your opinion, Miss Brooks, I have so far failed to notify the police or fire departments. It is my belief that if we can successfully avoid any and all panic, we can ourselves remove the student body and faculty to a place of safety from this danger.
What danger?
Miss Brooks, there's a leopard in the supply room.
That's impossible, Mr. Conklin.
Impossible? But I tell you, I saw it.
Mr. Conklin, you said yourself you've just had some shots. Isn't it possible that what you saw could have been an illusion?
Miss Brooks, I slammed the door on the creature as soon as I saw it, but not until I'd gotten a good look. When I think of those slavering jaws, what they could rend.
What they've already rent. That is, I'm sure the shots had
something. Come with me, Miss Brooks. I'll prove to you the shots had nothing to do with it. For the life of me, I don't comprehend. Miss Brooks, what do you suppose that leopard is doing in the supply room?
Maybe he ran out of something.
Careful, Miss Brooks. That puny door could never hold him if he becomes enraged. Let's tiptoe up to it and listen to the beast.
When I'm calling you...
The beast hasn't got a bad voice. Oh, Stretch, it's us, Mr. Conklin and I. Open up.
Okay. Hi.
Where is it?
Where's what, Mr. Conklin?
The beast. There was a big... It had... Oh. How long have you been in this room, Snodgrass?
Me? Oh, right along, Mr. Conklin. All morning.
You see, Mr. Conklin, it was those shots after all. Now, why don't you go back to your office and lie down for a while?
But I can't understand it. I saw him as clearly as I see you. Clearer. Maybe I'd better get back to my office at that. A lot to do today. I've still got to find a suitable prize for that raffle. Maybe I'll call my doctor. Yes, that's what I'll do. I'll call the doctor. That's what I'm going to do it. The doctor.
Stretch. Stretch. Quick, Stretch. Get him out from under and let's go.
Get who out from under what, Miss Brooks?
Peanuts. You hid him, didn't you, when I told you that Mr. Conklin was with me?
Oh, no, Miss Brooks. Peanuts blew.
He blew?
Yeah. I didn't want to admit it in front of old man Mr. Conklin. But I left the supply room for about 10 minutes, and when I got back, the dog had taken a powder.
He could use some powder. Oh, but this is terrible, Stretch. We've got to find him before Mr. Conklin sees him again. You'd better go directly to the cafeteria and look for him.
Cafeteria? But it isn't lunch period yet, Miss Brooks.
For him, it's lunch period all day. Some of our younger students are still pretty tender, you know. I'll look in Mr. Boynton's biology laboratory. Maybe something in the lab attracted Peanuts. I know there's something that attracts me in there. Now, suppose you get going, Stretch.
Okay, Miss Brooks. I'll report back to you if I find him.
Yes, do that, Stretch. I'll just close up this supply...
Oh, excuse me, Miss Brooks, but I just ran into Daddy in the hall. He's very overwrought.
Well, that's better than being underwrought. Your father's just a little nervous, Harriet. He's been to the doctor, you know.
Yes, I know. That's why he asked me to tell you that you've got to pick out a prize for the community chest raffle tickets we sold last week.
Me?
Yes. The drawing's this afternoon.
Get her on, Harriet. Right now, I've got to see a real man about a real dog. Excuse me, Mr. Boynton. I hope I'm not interrupting anything.
Oh, not at all, Miss Brooks. I was just going to have a little snack. Brought some milk and pastry from home. It's Danish.
Danish? Well, don't bite it till you see if it's wearing a license.
What?
I'll skip it, Mr. Boynton. Do you mind if I look around the lab?
No, Miss Brooks, but what are you looking for?
I'd rather skip that, too, Mr. Boynton. If I tell you, you'll only give me an incredulous look and say, why did you do a crazy thing like that?
No, I won't, honestly.
Well, I lost a dog. It's a Great Dane, Mr. Boynton. I brought him to school this morning.
You brought a Great Dane to school? Why did you do a crazy thing like that?
I knew it. But it's too late for explanations now, Mr. Boynton. I've got to find him.
Of course, and I'll do everything I can to help you, but let's approach this problem in a scientific manner. Take the habits and customs of the creature and go from there.
Fine, but do you know the habits of a Great Dane?
Oh, Miss Brooks, I'm a biologist, if I say so myself. I know the habits of animals from A to Z. Or perhaps I should say from aardvark to zebra. That's a little joke we scientists like to tell.
Well, tell it later on, will you? Right now, we've got to find Peanuts. That's his name.
Oh, well, the Great Dane, also called Boarhound, has a keen sense of smell. He's an excellent dog for hunting.
I know. I've been hunting this one all morning.
Tell me, Miss Brooks, where was he when you last saw him?
In the supply room.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's consider for a moment the Dane's remarkable sense of hearing. It's 5 times greater than a man's, you know. Do you think he might have heard anything that made him run away?
Just the one about the aardvark and the zebra.
Please, Miss Brooks, I'm trying to help you. The Dane was originally developed to hunt boars, hence the name Boarhound, and he was a cross between...
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Boynton. But you've just given me a very important lead. You say the Dane likes to hunt boars.
That's correct.
Then all I have to do is put myself in his place. Now, if I was hunting for a boar, where would I go?
Well, I'm sure I don't know.
I do. I'd go to the office of the biggest boar at Madison. Mr. Conklin, here I come.
Come in.
Mr. Conklin, could I talk to you for a moment?
I suppose so, Miss Brooks. Sit down. This has been a trying day for me, a very trying day.
Yes, I know, Mr. Conklin.
They haven't been able to isolate my particular allergy, and the doctor says it may take some time. Excuse me. Hello, Mr. Allergy speaking. Conklin.
Hello, Mr. Conklin. This is Mrs. Davis. I wouldn't disturb you at school like this, but it's terribly important. I've got to speak to Miss Brooks.
Oh, she's right here, Mrs. Davis. It's for you.
Thank you. Hello, Mrs. Davis.
Hello, Connie. I've just some distressing news for you. Mrs. Davis called and said her husband's doctor discovered that he's allergic to dog hair.
Mrs. Evans? What?
Naturally, they can't keep Peanuts any longer. So Mrs. Evans told me to tell you that he's yours.
Mine? Oh, but I can't... Where is Mrs. Evans? I'll call her back.
I'm afraid that's impossible, Connie. They've just left town for the summer.
Left town? But, well, I'll talk to you about it later on, Mrs. Davis. Thanks, if you'll forgive a lie, for calling.
Everything all right, Miss Brooks?
Huh? Oh, yes. Everything is dandy, Mr. Conklin.
Good, good. Now, about this prize for the community chest raffle, I've been racking my brain. Have you been able to think of anything? What did you say, Miss Brooks?
Me? I didn't say anything, Mr. Conklin. What did you say?
I said, listen!
I thought that's what you said. Mr. Conklin, I think I've got the answer to both your problems. Well, first, your allergy. Mr. Conklin, do you hang your coat in the closet over there?
Yes, I do.
And did you wear a tan top coat to school today?
That's right.
How tall is it?
Tall?
Has it got soft brown buttons?
Yes, I think they're brown.
With long eyelashes?
Miss Brooks, what are you trying to...
Grip the arms of your chair tightly, Mr. Conklin. Peanuts! Here, Peanuts!
Eleven! Take it away! Take it away!
This is Mr. Conklin. Meet Mr. Conklin, Peanuts. Mr. Conklin, shake hands with the first prize in the community chest raffle.
As our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment. And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, the drawing for the grand prize occurred in assembly that afternoon.
Attention, everyone. Quiet. Quiet, please. Quiet. I'm happy to say that every member of the student body and faculty has contributed something to our community chest drive. And as we promised, there will be a prize for the holder of the winning number, which is... 644.
Miss Brooks, let's see your stub.
My stub? Oh, don't be silly, Walter. I never won a raffle in my life.
Well, won this one.
Oh,
644.
No. Oh, no,
there's
Walter.
A winner right here, Mr. Conklin. It's Miss Brooks.
Oh, well, congratulations, Miss Brooks. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Just one thing, Mr. Conklin.
Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler. Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, Leonard Smith, Mary Jane Croft, and Pinto Kolbeg. For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evening over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. One good reason to be proud we're Americans is that we're always free to tell our government how we feel about its actions. But let's not forget that freedom is everybody's job. All of us must work to keep our individual rights and freedoms by voting in an informed way so that the best men and women are placed in office. We must serve willingly on juries and public committees and take an interest in the development of our community, state, and country. For by being better citizens, we can show the world that America is a strong, successful democracy. Stay tuned now for People's Choice, which follows over most of these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And you are listening to Radio Vault, the May 27th edition here on WHFR Dearborn.
This is Scott Boatwright. I would like to invite you to join me for my latest radio show on WHFR. It is called Cold Radio Fusion, every Tuesday nights from 10 p.m. until midnight. Each Tuesday of the month has its own rotating style of music. First Tuesdays, you can relax with experimental ambient sounds. Second Tuesdays, dress in black and or leather to enjoy goth, industrial, dark electronic club music. Third Tuesdays, come headbang with me to most styles of metal. Finally, Fourth Tuesdays, relax and chill with Stoner Doom Sludge Rock. That's Cold Radio Fusion every Tuesday nights from 10 p.m. until midnight, only on the station Making Waves. Listen on the internet at WHFR.FM or on your FM dial A9.3 in the Detroit, Dearborn, Wayne County area.
Attention licensed practical nurses. Are you looking for a convenient way to earn your RN degree? Do you need the flexibility of a program who recognizes you for your previous hard work as an LPN? Here's great news. Henry Ford College has exactly what you're looking for with their Advancement LPN to RN Bridge program. You can advance your career and become a licensed registered nurse. Want more info? Give us a call at our School of Health and Human Services at 313-845-9877. That's 313-845-9877.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
The movie theater's victory broadcast. The War Activities Committee of the Motion Picture Industry, in collaboration with the United States Treasury, presents the movie theater victory broadcast to inaugurate the sale of war bonds and stamps in every motion picture theater in the United States starting tomorrow. Our guests, Red Skelton, Reza Stevens, Harriet Hilliard, Marjorie Main, Kerry Wilson, Irene Manning, Lee Sweetland, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, Max Terr singing ensemble, and your master of ceremonies for the evening, Mr. Edward Arnold.
Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, our country takes another step toward victory. The motion picture industry, which has already done so much in the interest of national unity and the stimulation of national morale, now throws the full power of its 16,000 box offices into the fight for freedom. Starting tomorrow, United States war savings bonds and stamps will be on sale at every theater in the country, from border to border and coast to coast. And the 12 million film fans who go to the movies every day to see a good show will have an opportunity to help Uncle Sam put on the biggest show of all. After dark, on holidays, at all the times when ordinary agencies are closed, you can buy war bonds and stamps at your local movie theater. So start buying a stamp with every ticket tomorrow. That's Meredith Wilson's way of saying, step aside, Edward Arnold. We're off with a couple of songs, grand songs, with the star of Yankee Doodle Dandy, Miss Irene Manning. Keep your feet moving, ladies and gentlemen, to the rhythm of the United Nations March to Victory.
Don't give up, tell the actors, be a sound, fella, chin up, cheerio, carry on. Keep a stiff upper lip when you're in down.
Thank you.
you, Meredith Wilson and Irene Manning. Now cast your eyes down that dusty road, ladies and gentlemen. Here comes Red, I dude it, Skelton, and his girlfriend, Harriet Hilliard.
Thank you very much, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm lucky to be here tonight. I drove over, and to avoid an accident, I drove between two trolley cars. You know anybody wants to buy a tall, thin Buick? On my way over, I saw an old friend of ours, Clem, the fellow from the country, and he was walking along the street on the way to the movies.
Well, here I am. On my way to the movie. Rose O'Day, Rose O'Day. She's my fellow Marusha, Marusha, Bala, Bala, Boom, Boom, Day. Whatever that means. If it means what I think it does, hot diggity. Oh, boy, look at that pretty girl in front of me. Maybe I better comb my hair. Well, what do you know? My rabbit didn't run away after all. Gee, it's a pretty girl. Howdy, miss. Well, Daisy,
Daisy. Didn't recognize you for a minute. You got on a clean shirt.
Yep. I stayed up all night erasing it. Look, I got a haircut, too.
Well, what do you know? Your head don't come to no point after all. Mm. Where you going, Clem?
I'm going down to the movies. Would you like to go?
No, but I gotta go to the beauty parlor.
That's good.
Well, now, Clem, you talk as though I ain't pretty.
Oh, sure you are. Your hair is what makes you pretty. I like the way it hangs down over your shoulders. Just glistens in the sunlight. By the way, where is it?
Well, it's over to the beauty parlor. That's why I'm going over.
Oh.
Well, I'll see you later.
Okay.
And remember, Clem, you better be true to me.
Oh, don't worry. I love you, Daisy June. I love the ground you walk on. And that property you own on the south side of town, too.
Say, what you going to the theater for? You seen the picture.
I know, but I like to look at that woman in that cage sitting in front of the place.
Woman in the cage?
Yep.
Clem, that's the cashier in the box office.
It is? Well, no wonder she got mad when I kept feeding her peanuts.
Well, I'll see you later.
Okay. Boy, would Daisy June get mad if she knew that cashier was the widow. Rose O'Day! Well, here's the theater.
Hi, Clem!
Hi, Marge! Gee, you look pretty. I never knew you had freckles.
Them ain't freckles. A car hit a mud hole in front of the theater.
Ain't you got a kiss for a little Clemsy?
No. I'm saving my lips for Lockheed. And besides, you'll smear my lip through.
Well, then let me kiss you on the neck.
No. Your teeth always get caught in the wrinkles.
Oh, my teeth ain't that bad, are they?
I don't know, but every time you smile, they look like a lot of slabs in a crowded cemetery.
Hey, what them pretty tickets you're selling?
They ain't tickets. They're war stamps.
War stamps?
Yep. If you buy them, you can lick the other side.
Well, if I didn't, how could I get them to stick in the book? Gee, boy, looks like all the girls in Hollywood are doing defense work, ain't it?
Yeah, and before the war, too. You sure are dumb.
I sure am to give you all them laughs, but I ain't so dumb. When I was in school, I was voted as the one most likely to.
One most likely to what?
I don't know. I got kicked out before I got that far.
I went to school. I went to Vassar.
Vassar? Well, that's a girl's school.
Well, what do I look like? One of big Crosby's horses. You got me there. Well, what do I look back. One of Bing Crosby's horses. Don't you answer that, or you'll only lead to bloodshed.
If you'd like for one of our interpreters to step in and give this to you, we'll be very happy.
Well, do you want to buy some of these war stamps?
Well, if I do, they get a whipping. I do it.
How many?
I'll have $10 worth.
Oh, Clem, you're helping a great cause. And just for that, I will give you that itty-bitty kiss.
Well, all right. Gee, you kiss just like Wally Berry.
You sort of kiss like an old sea lion yourself.
Gee, I always thought you was a homegirl.
Well, stop looking coy and help me get my head back through the bars of this box office.
And there you have a typical scene that might possibly take place any time after tomorrow, where war bonds and stamps go on sale at 16,000 motion picture theaters in America. Thank you, Harriet Hilliard and Red Skelton. And the cashier in the box office was Marjorie Main. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to meet a typical moving picture fan. She was chosen by lot from the audience of a Los Angeles theater. And I just want to ask her a few questions about our new plan to sell United States war bonds and stamps in movie houses. Right up here, please, miss, won't you?
Thank you, Mr. Arnold.
Now, I'm not going to ask you your name, but there are certain things I'd like you to know about you. For instance, you're quite a movie fan, aren't you?
Oh, I wouldn't call myself a real fan. I only go about twice a week.
Well, you'll do till a real fan comes along. Now, tell me, how do you like this new idea of selling war bonds and stamps at the movie theater?
I think it's a wonderful idea, Mr. Arnold. I really do. And if I could say something...
Why, sure, of course. Go on. What is it?
Well, I belong to several fan clubs.
Yes?
I belong to one for Robert Taylor and one for Tyrone Power and one for... Oh, well, I belong to a lot of them. But I've just had an idea for a fan club everybody could belong to.
And what's that?
An Uncle Sam fan club. And all you have to do to be a member in good standing is buy one 10-cent stamp every time you buy a movie ticket. Don't you think that's a good idea?
Oh, I'll say. Have you got any more?
There must be almost a million fans around the country, aren't there?
My dear, there are 85 million. Think of it. You could call your club the American Moviegoers Legion for Victory. And if any one of you bought just one 10-cent stamp at your movie theater, it would bring Uncle Sam $8,500,000. Why, that's enough to buy 10 or 12 patrol bombers.
You think I got something, Mr. Arnold?
Well, very definitely, my dear. And I hope all our listeners will join your new organization at once. Come on, everybody. Join the American Moviegoers Legion for Victory. And thank you for the suggestion, Miss Film Fan. Now, come on, Meredith. You know, Meredith Wilson has written a new song. That's always an occasion. But this one more so than any other. He calls it Gangway. And Gangway it is for Meredith Wilson, the ensemble, and Lee Sweetland, dedicated to all our fighting men.
Here comes MacArthur and Taylor and Chiang Kai-shek, FDR and Winnie and Big Joe.
Million more of us who've just begun to fight. Gangway!
The next voice you will hear is one that comes to you from the silver screen of your favorite motion picture theater. It's the voice of the What Do You Think Man, the movie voice of Nostradamus himself, Kerry Wilson.
May 30th, 1942. On the calendars, it is a date printed in red, a holiday. Out from the florist shops will go millions of roses and spring blossoms. Out to a million tiny plots of land will go the living. To kneel down, pluck the weeds from someone's grave, and set a brilliant spray of flowers in the earth that hides the long sleep of our American dead. In all lands and among all peoples, there is some day of each year which is set aside for this solemn rendezvous between us, the living and the dead. The date differs, of course, as in our own southern states, where another day is chosen for the memorials to those who fell in their uniforms of gray. And with other people, other days, as well as the official memorial day that dawns a few hours from now. The dates differ, the religions differ. But there is no difference in death. There is no difference in the spirit of wonder that comes to us as we stand at the soldier's grave and say, we live and are free today because for us you gave up living and freedom to die. Will you hear us tomorrow, men of America, men who sleep deep in the soil, when our hearts speak to you once again, we live because you died. We kneel beside the resting place of one who fell long ago, by a dry-piled stone wall in New England. Can you hear us speak, soldier of Valley Forge?
Jonathan Andrews, sir. Age 32. Home, Rhode Island. Trade, harness mending. Reporting for duty. I got my own musket here. 200 rounds of shot and a set of leather working knives. Figure on mending shoes for General Washington's army and peppering the enemy.
How did you die, Private Andrews?
Oh, same way anybody else does, I guess. Ran up to cut the saddlebags off of one of their officers. Brought him down off his horse, all right. But he took me with his saber as he fell. But it don't matter how you die, does it?
No, Private Andrews. Can you tell me, why did you die?
Well, it was one of those little tracts. Pamphlet that the elders read at the meeting house. Rights of Man. We was fighting each other up and down the colonies about the rights of man long enough. Us from Rhode Island and them from Boston. Bloodying each other's nose over it as soon as we was big enough to swing a fist. Yeah, but now they said the enemy didn't believe in the rights of common men. So we picked up our muskets, gave our wives a hug, and lit out for General Washington. But, it was right, wasn't it? Meaning we didn't die in vain.
Cyrus Cobb reporting. I died in 1812. Military chaplain, sir, attached to the 20th Regulars. It was outside Washington the morning they pushed us back. Was reading the final services to a dying man, sir, when the bullet found me. So it was my last service. Praise the Lord. I believe in man. I never doubted.
Will Drummond reporting. I died of dysentery in a field camp in Virginia, 1864. They told us it was for the Union and the freedom of man. I never understood it very well, but I believed in it. It wasn't in vain, was it?
Charles Ransom reporting. I died in 1918, Bella Wood. It was a bridge that had to be blown up. I blew it up all right, but I was standing too close. I never doubted why I was fighting. It was to make democracy safe. It wasn't in vain, was it?
Ludwig Palmer reporting.
I got mine in the Argonne Forest. A bayonet when I wasn't ready for it. Was it in vain?
Corliss Schwab reporting. I died with the International Brigade in Spain in a flaming tank. We were all proud men and good fighters. They tell me I fought a good fight until I died. Was it in vain?
Chick Anderson reporting. I died in a foxhole in Bataan. We fought so long, we were so tired. I was almost glad when the plane came down to strafe us. Was I wrong to want to die because I was so tired? Was it in vain?
These are the voices of the dead, asking us their everlasting question on the eve of Memorial Day. All of us are afraid to die, aren't we? Yet these men, these billions of yesterday, preferred to die for us. Or was it for us, or for something we represent? This thing that has been given with their marching orders to every American soldier in every American fought war, the promise that he was representing the rights of the common man. Tomorrow we kneel by the myriad graves of our dead to answer their great cry, "Did I die in vain?" And when we come to the site of their resting place, our arms hid by the flowers they carry, shall we be able to give them the answer? And there was one other who died in action.
There was a little talk I made at a memorial ceremony shortly before my death. You've been quoting it a great deal these days. How did it go? That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain.
Which is, after all, the only clear answer ever made to why we Americans hold each year the holiday called Memorial Day.
Thank you, Kerry Wilson. Now, here's the new song poem written by Frank Lesser and Arthur Schwartz, inspired by John Steinbeck's book, The Moon Is Down, and sung by the motion picture and Metropolitan Opera star, Reza Stevens.
Despair are not without number. be endlessly long on its way, on its ominous way. Yet even so, there is light from the moon that has fled, in the sparks where the barracks have burned, in the blood that is gleaming so red, on the knife in the back that was turned, and the song will be whispered along from the dawn.
Gentlemen, I should like you to meet the executive director of the Pacific Coast Conference of Independent Theater Owners Association, Mr. Robert Poole. His message is a simple one. Mr. Poole.
Well, I just want to say, Mr. Arnold, that I firmly believe that this huge bond selling plan at the box office is a long step in the right direction. I know all of our exhibitors feel the same way, but we must remember that there are thousands of movie houses in America with very small seating capacities. Consequently, their patronage hardly measures up to the great metropolitan theaters that do more business in a day than they do.
Well, that's quite true, Mr. Poole, but what's your point?
Just this. When the returns of the bond sales are published in the various trade papers, it might make our little fellows feel rather insignificant by comparison.
Well, that feeling must never exist. We're all in this to do our job, be it big or small. And the final reward will be victory.
That's the way I feel, too. And if the small theater owner will only realize that his task is to press into the sale of stamps and bonds by putting his every facility at the disposal of the government, none of them need feel ashamed of the size of the net result.
That's right.
So let me say this to every independent theater owner in America. Use every bit of exploitation you can to promote the sale of these passports to freedom. Pitch day and night, and urge every patron to hop on Uncle Sam's bond wagon.
Thank you, Mr. Poole, and I'm sure they won't fail. And that winds up our Hollywood salute to the motion picture theaters of America, with sincere appreciation to the Hollywood Victory Committee. Thank you.
The Movie Theater's Victory Broadcast was presented from the Don Lee KHJ Studios in Hollywood. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
All right, you're listening to Radio Vault, WHFR 89.3, Memorial Day special from 1942, May 29 to be exact. And we're going to go now to something kind of related. We're going to take a listen to Command Performance. And as I mentioned before, this is a series that was aimed primarily to the troops in the military. But let's listen.
Performance USA. The greatest entertainers in America as requested by you, the servicemen and women of the United States Armed Forces throughout the world. Command Performance. Presented this week and every week till it's over, over there. Okay there, gang. Time to rustle the rope around the rostrum and reel in some ribald raucouses in answer to your request to Command Performance, Armed Forces Radio, Los Angeles, USA. Incidentally, this month marks the 5,000th hour of broadcasting from the AES at Tehran in the Persian Gulf Command. And in honor of them, Command Performance has selected as your mistress of ceremonies on this particular stanza the lovely star of Universal Pictures, Deanna Durbin.
Thank you, Don Wilson, and hi, fellas.
Pardon me, Deanna.
What is it, Don?
Well, Deanna, I hate to bother you, but something has just come up, and I think you ought to know about it.
Really?
Yes, you know, Jack Benny's on the program tonight.
Yes, but not till later in the show.
Well, he didn't understand it that way. You see, he's been a master of ceremonies so long, he assumed he was going to run things tonight.
Oh. Well, where's Jack now?
Well, he's backstage mumbling to himself and writing "Down with Deanna Durbin" on all the dressing room doors.
Oh, I'm sorry Jack is so upset.
But I'm sure that you can straighten things out, Deanna. And when he comes in, be diplomatic, won't you?
Oh, sure.
Here he comes now.
I must be tactful.
Yes.
Gentlemen of the AEF, meet the great comedian who has entertained you in person in almost every theater of operations, Jack Benny.
Thanks, folks. Hi, fellas.
Welcome to Command Performance, Jack.
Thanks, you little sneak.
Now, Jack. Jack, you shouldn't feel like that. I was called upon to be mistress of ceremonies here tonight, and just because you misunderstood and thought you were going to take charge is no reason for any hard feelings.
It isn't, huh?
No. No, I realize that you're one of the world's greatest MCs.
You do, huh?
Also realize that you've just returned from an extensive tour of our bases in the South Pacific.
And they love me in New Guinea.
Well, I understand that they loved you everywhere. But I should think that after a trip like that and with all that work, you must be awfully tired.
Oh, I am. I'm exhausted.
Then why don't you go over in the corner and sit down?
Now, just a minute. I'm not that weak, young lady. Besides, if you think I came all the way down here just to sit in the corner, you've got another thing coming. Tell you, I don't know what's happening to all the young girls nowadays.
Well, naturally, you don't get around them much.
Now, listen, Deanna, topping me will get you nowhere. If you want to be mistress of ceremonies, run the show. It's all yours, Miss Durbin.
Thank you, Mr. Benny. As you know, on these command performances, we aim to answer all the mail that comes our way. One of the names we come across over and over again is Martha Tilton. And since her recent tour to the South Pacific, that mail has really piled up. So now...
You see, the mail has really piled up. I mean, there's no cavernous
Jack,
there.
Jack, please.
You need vaudeville training to introduce people right.
All right, Jack. I'm willing to learn. How would you make the introduction?
Well, I'd try to use a little ingenuity. I'd say something like, a funny thing happened to me on the way to the studio. Not even the joke yet, you know. I stopped in at the drugstore, and there was a girl playing the pinball machine. And she would have won except for one thing.
What was that, Jack?
She was Tilton. Martha Tilton. Now, there's an introduction. Don't you think so, Deanna?
Well, you could never throw your brain out of joint thinking of it, but it was all right.
I thought it was dynamite. How about you, Martha?
Well...
Now, there's a girl who knows. Gee, Martha, you're looking swell.
Well, thanks, Jack.
You know, I haven't seen you since we both got back from the South Pacific. What's the good word?
It's still no.
Find out what Martha's going to sing. I'm getting nowhere.
Okay, Jack. What's for the boys, Martha?
Lots of requests for I Walk Alone, Deanna.
Present to you now, and I do hope this introduction meets with Mr. Benny's approval, one of the finest instrumentalists and band leaders in the country. You know, folks, I was afraid I was going to be late tonight.
Why, Deanna?
Because when I got here, I couldn't open the door, see? Tommy Dorsey fell.
Thanks, Deanna.
Tommy, I'd like to explain that introduction. You see, it comes from the Jack Benny School of Comedy.
Jack Benny? I remember him. He used to be a very funny guy. I'm still funny, Junior. Oh, hello, Jack. What are you doing here? Up to now, nothing. What are you doing here, Tommy?
Oh, I'm going to take some and leave some with the boys.
That's right. The fellows overseas have sent in lots of requests for an all-American jam session.
Good idea.
So we've invited the best in the West to beat it out.
In addition to Tommy Dorsey, we have Count Basie at the piano, Buddy Rich at the drums, Illinois Jackcat on the tenor sax, Lionel Hampton on the vibes, Artie Shaw on the clarinet, Sergeant Ed McKinney on the bass, Sergeant Ziggy Elman on the trumpet, and Les Paul on the guitar.
Come on, boys, let's go.
Thank you.
That's all right if you want loud stuff. Fellas, let's give Ida sweet as apple cider.
And now, fellas.
Quiet. Dan, I don't mind a little kidding, but when I play a beautiful violin solo, give me the credit for it. Nobody else.
Well, Jack, I was just trying to have a little fun. Be clever, like you said.
There's nothing funny about my music, Deanna.
Oh, Jack, calm down. Calm down.
Calm down?
If you and Deanna have a difference of opinion, settle it. But stop bickering.
Settle it? How can I hit a woman?
You don't have to hit anybody.
Well, I'm not the kind of a guy that settles things with words. I'm a two-fisted guy.
What's come over you?
You want to know something, Don? I beat up Jimmy Cagney on the way to the studio tonight, and he's plenty tough.
You beat up Cagney?
Look, gentlemen, are we going to get on with the show, or are we going to stand here and listen to Mr. Benny flap his gray chops?
Oh, if you were only Cagney.
Jack, stop dreaming. You wouldn't sneeze if Jimmy Cagney threw a handful of pepper in your face.
No, I wouldn't, eh? Well, it just so happens that on the way down here tonight, Cagney bumped into my car, and that's all I needed, brother.
Still sounds fantastic.
Is that so? Well, I'll tell you what. Ginger Rogers was driving along. She saw the accident. You call her up tomorrow and ask her. She'll tell you how tough I was.
Well, we don't have to wait to call her tomorrow, Jack. It so happens she's standing in the wings right now. Come on out, Ginger.
Hello, Deanna.
Trouble with this show. Everybody's on it.
Why, hello, Jack. What are you doing here?
What are you doing here? Jeepers.
Oh, Ginger, Jack was just telling us that you were a witness to a little accident. What happened?
Oh, it's not important. I'm not suing Cagney or anything. Let's forget about it.
No. I'd like to know what happened.
Well...
Say, Ginger, that's a beautiful hat. May I wear it sometime?
You've still got an umbrella of mine that you borrowed in 1929.
Well, I've been meaning to return it. You know.
Oh, now quit stalling, Jack. What about the accident?
What are you, an ambulance chaser or something? We're talking about Ginger's hat.
Come on, Ginger. Tell us about the accident.
Well, we were all driving east on Sunset, and Jack was waving at me and giggling and honking his horn.
Well, sure I was giggling. I mean, the springs in my front seat are all sticking through.
Naturally, Jack's car got out of control, and he smacked into Cagney's fender.
That'll be decided in court, Miss Rogers.
Then things started to happen. Jack was really mad. He jumped out of his car. Cagney jumped out of his car. Jack jumped back into his car. But fast.
Well, I bawled Cagney out. You can't deny that.
Well, that's right. He really dressed Jimmy down.
Mm. You're darn right I did.
Well, of course, Jack locked the door and rolled up the windows first.
I did not. There's not a window in my car.
Not now, there isn't. I'll never forget the look on Jack's face when he saw Jimmy's fist coming through the windshield.
Well, he didn't hit me.
Oh, could he? You had your head in the glove compartment.
I was looking for my tear gas fountain pen. Lucky for Cagney, I didn't find it. Believe me, if he ever opens his mouth to me again, I'll fix his wagon.
You will, huh?
Yes.
Well, Jack, what would you say if I told you that right now, Jimmy Cagney was standing right in back of you?
Well, that's just the... Yikes!
Jimmy Cagney, fellas.
Well, hello, Ginger. Deanna?
Hello, Jimmy. Mm.
Well, if it isn't Barney Oldfield.
I know someplace I've got a laugh here. I don't know where it is. Listen, don't try to laugh it off, Cagney. You scratch my fender, it's going to cost you about $300 to have it touched up.
Who's doing the painting for you, Rembrandt?
That happens to be his name, Morty Rembrandt. 1820 Temple Street. Open evenings. I'll have Morty send you the bill.
Look, Jack, you better drop the whole thing, or I'll start an action against you to collect for the damage to my car.
You'll have some job getting anything out of me, brother.
I'll get some dough out of you if I have to dig up your whole front yard.
You can dig all you want, but if you haven't got the map, you're a dead duck. Besides, Cagney, I've got a witness. She saw the whole thing, Ginger Rogers.
Why, I couldn't testify for you, Jack. After all, you bumped into Jimsy.
Jimsy? Jimsy? Well, I can see where I stand here.
Well, I think Ginger's being very fair.
Fair meaning she's not a brunette. Listen, Ginger, you can look at this accident any way you want to.
Look, Jack, you're acting like a little boy.
Yep, an old, broken-down little boy. Jack, once and for all, let's drop the whole thing, or you're going to pay for my fender.
Oh, I am, eh? Well, I can see there's only one way out. We'll settle this man to man. Do you fight?
Quite a bit.
What else do you do?
I dance.
Well, let's dance and settle this.
I hate to break up these beautiful hostilities, but we've got to get back to command performance. There's a letter here addressed to Jimmy Cagney from the Brooklyn gang at APO 885. It seems that Gowanus Gus, Flatbush Flanagan, Demi-Tass McGuire of Borough Hall, Leftfield Louie from Ebbets Field, and Sandflea Phil from Coney Island have a special request.
What is it, Vienna?
Well, they say they haven't had a chance to see you in pictures lately, but they sure remember some of those tough guy parts you used to do. So they want you to pick somebody on command performance tonight and punch them in the jaw.
Well, let's see now. Who all's on the show?
Well, there's me, Martha Tilton, Ginger Rogers...
And Don Wilson. Good old Don.
And then, of course, there's you, Jackie.
Now she gets friendly.
Well, I'd like to oblige the boys in Brooklyn. It looks like you're it, Jackie. I'm game if you are.
Who goes on the game end? Why can't I do the punching? I've been in some pretty tough pictures myself, you know.
Brutal is the word.
Evade the issue. Why can't I hit you?
Because this is command performance, and we've got to answer the requests exactly as they come in.
Very well. I'm ready. First, there's something I'd like to see. Gentlemen, I regret I have but one jaw to give to my country.
Also, that you ever took your head out of that glove compartment.
Please, Ginger, there's no time for levity. Go ahead, Jimmy, and remember, I'm not a kid anymore.
Well, here goes. No, can't do it. I can't do it.
Come on, you coward. Come
okay,
on.
Okay,
okay. Ow! Ow!
Thank you, Jimmy Cagney. And will the gentleman who caught Mr. Benny's toupee kindly return it to the stage?
Jack, are you all right?
No, I'm not all right. You were supposed to fake that punch, Cagney, and you really let me have it. Now it's my turn, brother.
Oh, take it easy, Jack. Take it easy.
Take it easy, nothing. Put up your dukes. Now take that.
And will the gentleman who caught Mr. Benny kindly return him to the stage?
While the ushers are reviving Mr. Benny, this seems a good time to say that we've had an awful lot of requests to have Jimmy Cagney sing some of the songs from Yankee Doodle Dandy. How about it, James?
Very glad to, Deanna, very glad to. And incidentally, I want to thank all the fellas in the ETO who treated me so wonderfully when I was visiting them recently. I really got a great bang out of it, and that's no fooling. And for me to tell you that you're doing a great job is like telling Abbott and Costello who's on first. Anyhow, with a bow to George M. Cohen, here it is.
You're a grand old flag, you're a high-flying flag, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or a brag. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag. I'm a Yankee Doodle dandy, Yankee Doodle do or die. A real life nephew of my Uncle Sam, born on the 4th of July. I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart, she's my Yankee Doodle joy. Now Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the pony. I am that Yankee Doodle boy.
Well, gang, that kind of wraps up another bundle of whatever you want to call it. Incidentally, we'd like to hear from you if you have any extra special people or things you'd like to hear. We got that note from you guys down at the Atterbrin Hotel in downtown Guadalcanal. And we got some ideas for you that we're sending along. Meantime...
Pardon me, Deanna. I'd just like to say that if any of my fans are worried about me, I'm perfectly okay. That punching business was just a little gag. I'd give that Cagney a Mickey Finn if I didn't think he'd enjoy it. Good night, fellas.
And... this is Deanna Durbin saying, the best of the best from the USA. Good night.
From 1944, a little show called Command Performance that they did for those in the military back during the wartime years and a little bit after that as well. Well, just a reminder that you are listening to listener-supported non-commercial radio. As always, from the campus of Henry Ford College, it's WHFR Dearborn. Radio Vault kicking off our final hour for today. And we were originally considering bringing you a Lux Radio Theater episode, but I couldn't get it to sound exactly the way it should sound. So in its place, we've got a couple of Jack Benny shows. Once again, this is Radio Vault. You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. You knew that, right? Here's Jack Benny from 1955, second to last show.
The Jack Benny Program. Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let's turn the clock back to Wednesday and go out to Jack Benny's house in Beverly Hills. It's morning, and at the moment, Rochester is busy cleaning the den.
Oh, it's a long, long time from June to September. But when you haven't been back, there's much to remember. Well, that takes care of the vacuuming. I better empty the bag. Mr. Benny's residence stars stage, screen, radio, television, and mambo lessons from 6 to 8.
You can skip the commercial, Rochester. This is Susie.
Oh, Susie. How are you, honey?
Don't honey me. I haven't heard from you all week.
All week? I called you the night before last.
You did?
Yeah, you weren't home, and I talked to your mother.
That's funny. I wonder why she didn't tell me you called.
Maybe she didn't recognize my voice.
Oh, Rochester, come now.
Tell the truth, honey. I meant to call, but I forgot.
It doesn't matter, Rochester, because we're going to have to stop seeing each other anyway. The way we're going, we'll never get married.
Well, Susie, I know it's discouraging, but I promise we'll get married just as soon as Mr. Benny gives me a raise.
I wouldn't wait that long for Sugar Ray Robinson.
Susie.
You should have had a raise years ago.
I know, but there's always something that takes priority. Like this week, Mr. Benny's having the living room decorated.
You mean he actually went out and hired a painter?
Yeah, Mr. Benny's in the living room with him right now.
Now, paint that corner. Now, get the ceiling above it. Now, get the wall. Get the wall.
Yeah,
get the wall.
Yeah,
get
yeah,
the wall.
Yeah, the wall, the wall.
Now, get the top of the windowsill. The top of the windowsill.
All right, all right, the sill.
A little more on the top, top, top. Good, good. Now get the other windowsill, the other one, the other
I'm
one.
I'm getting it, I'm getting it. Boy, oh boy, this is the last time I ever take a job by the hour. Huh? Get the wall, get the wall, get the corner. Not a sill. It's bad enough that you talked me into working for half of what I'm supposed to charge. But I can't stand being hounded like this.
Who's hounding you? You mean to tell me you've never had customers that took an interest and made suggestions?
Yeah, but you're the first one that ever stayed up here on a ladder with me.
Oh, I didn't realize. Well, you keep working. I'll let you alone for a while.
Okay, but would you do me a favor?
What?
This time when you leave, don't put on those fast records.
Well, I just wanted to entertain you.
Entertain me? During the flight of the bumblebee, I finished 2 walls.
All right. Smart Alec. He better watch his step or I'll report him to the union for working below scale. I wonder why I always get... Hello?
Hello, Jack. This is your little old piano player, Charlie Bagby.
Well, Charlie, how are you?
That's what I called about. I don't think I'll be able to make the show Sunday. I caught a cold.
A cold, eh? Yes, too bad. What are you taking for, Charlie?
Oh, the usual thing.
Well, how do you feel?
Fine. I can hardly walk.
Wait a minute, Charlie. Have you been drinking?
Well, it's not my fault. The doctor told me to take 2 fingers of cognac.
Well?
I drank 3 whole bottles, and it hasn't gone to my fingers yet.
Now, Charlie, don't try to tell me that you're just following the doctor's orders.
Oh, yes, I am.
Now, wait a minute. Look, Charlie, there isn't a doctor in town who'd tell you to drink liquor for a cold.
I know. I had to go all the way to Pismo Beach before I found this.
I thought so. You know, Charlie, some of these
Gotta hang
days...
up. Now, it's time for medicine.
Goodbye. He's so happy when he's sick. Gee, I'm glad he only has a cold. I'll never forget that month he staggered through pneumonia. When they finally put him in an oxygen tent, it exploded. But he's a pretty... Ah, there's the dog. Papa loves Mambo. Mama loves Mambo. Da-da-dee-deem-da-dum. Dee-da-dee-deem-da-dum.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Rochester, bring me an aspirin.
What's the matter? Do you got a headache?
Hello, Rochester.
Oh. I'll get you one, boss.
Come on in, Dennis, and close the door. Now, what's on your mind, kid?
Oh, I just came over to bring you a piece of my birthday cake.
Birthday cake? Well, that was very thoughtful of you, Dennis.
I saved it from my party. Here.
Oh, gee. Green icing. Tastes good, too. I never ate green icing before. So your birthday is today, huh?
No, 6 months ago.
Wait, Dennis, you mean this cake is 6 months old?
It was chocolate when I bought it.
Dennis, why in the world would you bring me a cake 6 months old and all covered with mold?
Well, that's the stuff they make penicillin out of.
So what?
You need all the help you can get.
Now cut that out! Now, Dennis.
Boss, here's your aspirin.
I don't need it. The penicillin cured me. Rochester, take this cake, stick a label on it, and put it in the medicine cabinet.
What?
Never mind. Come in.
Well, hello, Jack.
Oh, Don, come on in. Don, there's no rehearsal today. What are you doing around here?
Oh, I just dropped by to return this garden hose I borrowed from you last week.
My garden hose? Oh, you won't be needing it?
Not anymore. I found a belt my size.
Well, Don, there was no rush. You could have worn the hose a while longer.
I know, but it tickles when you turn the water on.
Well, that makes sense, I guess.
Here's today's mail, boss.
Oh, thanks, Rochester.
Say, Jack, isn't that paint I smell?
Yeah, I'm having the living room redecorated. You'll never recognize it.
Oh, really? What color's it going to be?
Well, the ceiling will be sort of an off-white, you see, and three of the walls are going to be beige.
Uh-huh. And what are you doing with the fourth wall?
Nothing. That's one we saved for advertising.
Rochester.
Remember the year Madman once took the ceiling?
Rochester, stop being funny. If you'll excuse me a second, Don, I just want to glance through my mail.
Go ahead, Jack.
See what I got here. The bill. Another bill. A circular. Another threatening letter from Arthur Murray. Yeah, he can teach his way. I'll teach mine. Hey, what's this? A letter from Waukegan. Well, I'll be darned. Hey, fellas. Here's a letter from a pal I haven't seen in 20 years, Stubb Wilbur. He was a classmate of mine in high school.
No kidding, Jack.
Yeah. And he's coming out here for a visit. Let's see. Arriving on the Super Chief at Union Station 2:30 p.m. on Wednesday the... Hey, that's today. I better get down there.
I'll go with you, Jack.
Me too.
Good, I'll just grab a jack and we'll go down to the station and meet my friend Stubb.
Gee, with that freeway, we sure made good time getting here.
Yeah. Come on, let's go in the station.
Train now leaving on track 5 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga.
I guess we better go to the south end of the depot to meet the incoming passengers.
Yeah, but I better check at the information desk and see if Stubbs' train's on time. Huh?
Hiya, bud.
Huh?
Long time no see.
Oh, yeah. Come on, fellas.
Jack, isn't that the racetrack tout?
Yeah, I'm always bumping into that tout. Look, why don't you and Dennis just browse around while I get the information?
Huh? Okay.
Let's see, where's the information booth here?
Correction, please. There will be no trip to Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga as previously announced. That train has just been rented to the Fairfax Kitty Park.
She is crowded. So crowded here. Excuse me. Pardon me. I wonder if I...
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Why, Mr. Kitson. Mr. Kitson, what are you doing here at the station?
I'm taking a trip to New York.
Well, well, all the way to New York, huh?
Yes, and I can see my wife's face now. Boy, will she be surprised.
Oh, she doesn't know you're coming.
She doesn't know I'm going.
Mr. Kitzel, don't tell me you had an argument with your wife.
Well, it isn't my wife, Mr. Benny. It's our relatives.
Your relatives, eh?
Yeah.
Why, are a lot of them living there with you?
You think this station is crowded? At the last count, 36 relatives came to live with us.
36 relatives?
Yeah, 12 of them were taking their word. They haven't got birth certificates.
Oh, I see.
What a crowd we got in my house. Every place they're sleeping. On the couches, on the beds, on the chairs, and on top of the piano is my cousin Murphy.
Murphy, your cousin?
He's one of the 12. We're taking his word for it.
Well, have a nice trip, Mr. Kitzel, and look me up when you get back.
This is a promise. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Mr. Kitzel.
Attention, please. We have just learned that while coming through Albuquerque, the westbound Sunshine Limited hit a cow and will be delayed several hours.
Jack.
What is it, Don?
Look who I just bumped into.
Hey, it's the Sportsman, the quartet. Hiya, fellas.
Attention, please. Now arriving on track 18, the Chief from Chicago. On track 2, the Lark from San Francisco. And on track 5, a cow from Albuquerque.
Gee, I bet that one is really tenderized. Now tell me, hey, Sportsman, what are you doing here at the station?
Oh, I'm afraid they haven't time to talk, Jack. They have to catch a train.
Oh, where are they going?
To Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Why?
If you know what we know, then you'll go where we go, where they croak and bye-bye and don't cry. We're on our way, oh, happy, happy day. So take it on and carry on. Forward, men, and stay in line. It's onward, onward to Caroline. That's where we'll get a ride. Think for me.
Have a nice trip, fellas.
Attention, please. Attention. Trains now leaving for Las Vegas on tracks 7 and 11.
Don, we
These
better...
trains are pulled by diesel engines.
Don.
Roll 'em.
Don, we better get that information about Stubbs' train. Come on, I think it's right over here. There's the information booth there. Oh, Mister.
Yeah!
Are you the information clerk?
Well, what do you think I am in this cage? A parakeet with a mustache?
Wait a minute. The last time I was down here, they had you behind the ticket counter. How did you get information?
I dialed 113.
Now, will you stop that? All I want to know is if the super chief will be arriving on time.
Let me see. The California Limited leaves in 15 minutes. The Grand Canyon departs in a half an hour. The Challenger is leaving in an hour and a half.
Wait a minute. I want to know about a train coming in. Why do you keep telling me about trains that are leaving?
Well, in psychiatry, they call it the power of suggestion.
Look, you still haven't answered my question. When will the super chief be in?
In exactly 15 minutes.
Thank you. Come on, Don.
Oh, wait a minute, Jack. What track does the train come in on? We have to know what gate to wait at. Oh, look, before we leave the window, why don't you ask the man where to go?
Okay. Oh, mister. Mister, could you tell me where to go?
What did you say?
I said, could you tell me where to go?
If you ask me that once more, I might let you have it.
Oh, never mind. Say, Don. Don, what happened to Dennis?
He's right over there weighing himself.
Oh, yes. Dennis, what are you jumping on that machine for?
Well, I put a penny in, but no peanuts came out.
Dennis, that's a weighing machine. It's a scale. When you put a penny in, a little card comes out. There it is down there.
Oh, yeah. Hey, gee, look, I weigh 155 pounds.
And Dennis, on the other side is your fortune.
Well, my fortune? Well, let me see. Gee, now they tell me.
What does it say?
No peanuts.
Well, come on, kids. We better get over to meet the train.
Look, Jack, there's plenty of time now. Why don't we go get a sandwich first?
Well, there's not that much time. I'm going to meet the train.
Well, I'm going to get a sandwich. You like to come with me, Dennis?
Well...
Let him go alone, Dennis. You come with me.
Okay.
Hey, Bud. Bud.
Who, me?
No, you with the pointed head.
He means me.
Yeah, you... Come here a minute.
Well, this is a switch.
Look, mister.
What are you doing?
I'm going with Mr. Benny.
Uh-uh.
What?
Go with Wilson.
Wilson? Why?
Well, look at the form. He's always out in front.
I don't know. What about Benny?
Benny hasn't got a chance. His photo finish was the horn blows at midnight. Now, take my word for it, Bud. Stick with Wilson.
Well, come here a minute.
What?
I'm sticking with Benny.
Why?
Wilson's carrying too much weight.
Huh?
He's got everything in the back stretch.
Well, okay, I'll see you in the poorhouse.
Come on, Dennis, come on. Stop. Stop wasting time.
Yeah, it's getting late. Well, I suppose I better go with you, too.
The Southbound Limited now leaving for Laguna, Capistrano, San Diego, Tijuana, Acapulco, and Mexico City, I think.
Jack, this is the gate right here.
Yeah, sure a lot of people waiting. Huh? Well, I can hardly wait to see Stubb again. Good old Stubb.
Yeah, I'll bet he'll be glad to see you, too. Come on, let's edge over a little.
I wonder what that kid is crying about.
Attention, the super chief is now arriving on track 8.
Come on, Mr. Benny. Everyone's getting ahead of us.
That poor kid. I better see why he's crying.
Oh, now, Jack, how can you butt in? You don't even know the kid.
Well, I can't just let him cry. What seems to be the trouble, Sonny? Did you lose your mommy? Look, I don't know what's wrong, but I wish you'd stop crying.
If you give me a nickel, I will.
Go ahead, Jack. Give it to him.
But, Don, I don't even know the kid.
The people are starting to come up the ramp.
All right, kid, here's a nickel. Now you can stop crying and dry your eyes because everything is going to
be... Let go of it already.
Oh.
Here you are, Dad.
Thanks. I didn't think you could do it.
Jack, do you see your friend?
No, I don't. I hope he didn't miss the train. Gee, that's the way he was in school, too. Completely irresponsible. That Stubb Wilbur. I was 2 years older than Stubb, and he got in the habit of letting me do his thinking for him.
Attention, please. Attention. The Luraline now arriving on track 5.
Luraline?
Man, was it foggy.
Well, there's no sense standing here. Let's go home.
Yeah, I guess so. Gee, I'm sorry I dragged you both down here on a wild goose chase.
Beg pardon, but could you be of a little assistance to me?
Huh? Oh, what can I do for you, sir?
Well, I don't see so good anymore. Would you mind reading an address I've got written down here on this piece of paper?
Let's see. 366 North Camden Drive. Wait a minute. That's my address.
Well, Jack Benny.
Stop, Wilbur. Gee, it's good to see you. Come on, Stubb. We got a lot to talk over. Here, I'll carry your bag.
Never mind the bags. Carry me.
Gee, it's amazing how old you can get when you don't lie about your age. Come on, everyone. Let's go home.
Friends, every minute, day and night, a destructive fire starts. And in 9 out of 10 cases, most fires start because someone is careless. Don't let that someone be you. Be sure your electrical wiring is properly installed. Put cigarettes and matches out before you discard them. Be on guard constantly against fire. Remember, only you can prevent fires. Thank you. Jack will be back in just a minute, friends.
Gosh, Stubb, isn't it wonderful, your first day in California?
Yeah. Can I go to bed now?
You want to go to sleep, but it's so early.
I know, but I'm so tired of painting this room.
We just have to finish this ceiling, and then we can go to sleep.
Yeah, sleep.
Good night, folks.
The program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsberg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Al Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks.
Life starts moving faster and faster. We need to make a choice to move faster with it
or to step off every now and then to marvel at the wonders around us, to take in new sights and sounds, songs and experiences, and to just remember how beautiful life can be. Let's take a deep breath and remember that each Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m., there's Afternoon Jazz with Mr. Jags. Basking in the middle of a Wednesday afternoon, a place where this season we can all savor the moment and take a deep breath of pure jazz. Your journey begins on 89.3 WHFR.
The Jack Benny Program. Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we come to the last Jack Benny show of the month. It's also the last program of the current series, and as a matter of fact, it's the last show of the season. So now I bring you a man I thought wouldn't last, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I know that you're trying to be clever on the final show, but how could you possibly have thought that I wouldn't last? After all, a man my age is just in the prime of life.
I guess you're right, Jack. They've been priming you for 20 years.
Don, George Global. CinemaScope stomach. Now, Don, control yourself. But, you know, you may be right. After all, nobody can last forever.
You're sure working on it, Bub.
Well, I see we have another candidate for the unemployment insurance. You better watch it, sister.
Jack's right, Mary. He deserves a little more respect from us. After all, he's one of the pioneers in the broadcasting business.
You're darn right. Why, when I did my first program, there were hardly any radios in the country.
And darn few people.
Darn few people. Plenty of people when I started.
They may have had feathers in their hair, but they were people.
Mary, if I were Jackie Gleason, you know what I'd say? One of these days, pow, back to the May Company.
If you were Jackie Gleason, I wouldn't have to go back.
All right.
Oh, Jack, why are you so touchy? Can't you take a joke?
Certainly I can take a joke, but here we're doing our last program of the season, and everyone comes in and insults me.
Well, I didn't insult you, Mr. Benny.
Huh? Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, sir.
Well, you see, Mary, Don, Dennis knows how to treat me with respect.
Certainly. I feel that when a man keeps you working all these years, he deserves respect.
Well, naturally.
A man doesn't get to be the star of a radio and television program unless he has ability and talent.
Thank you, Dennis.
No star can keep a loyal following of fans loving him through all the years unless he's an outstanding personality.
Well.
Can I go now, Mr. Benny?
Why?
I can't keep reading this stuff. It's making me sick.
Why did I have to let him go on? Why didn't I stop him when I was ahead? I should have stopped him earlier, like in 1946. Oh, well, it's the last show of the season. I won't be seeing him for quite a while.
Oh, say, that reminds me, Dennis. What are you going to do this summer?
Well, Don, I'm going to visit my uncle in Las Vegas.
I didn't know you had an uncle in Las Vegas, Dennis.
Yes, he's married and has a lovely wife and 3 slot machines.
Gee, Dennis, I envy you going to Las Vegas. I'd like to go there, but it's so expensive.
What do you mean, expensive? Last time I was there, I got a room for $2 a day.
$2? Must have been an awfully small room.
Well, yes, it wasn't too large. As a matter of fact, it didn't even have a bath.
Jack, do you mean to say that you stayed at a place without a bath?
I didn't need one, Don. They cleaned me before I got to my room. Hey, that's... You know, that's a funny joke.
It may have feathers on it, but it's a joke.
All right, anyway, I'm going.
going back to Las Vegas this summer and stay at the Flamingo Hotel.
Say, Mary, what are you going to do this summer when we're off the air?
Well, I think I'll just stay around the house, spend all of my time in the backyard in my garden.
Well, that should be nice. Here in California, you can grow some wonderful flowers.
I'm going to grow vegetables. I got to eat.
Say, Mary, that's smart, growing your own vegetables. Where'd you get the idea?
From the present Jack gave me last Christmas.
What'd he give you, Mary?
100 pounds of Vigoro. Gift wrap, yes.
Now, wait a minute, Mary. I think you're going just a little too far.
That's right, Mary. How can you say such things about a man who is so nice, so generous, so nice, so generous, so nice, so generous, so nice?
Dennis, turn the page already. For heaven's sake. Anyway, Dennis, time for you to do your song. And since this is the season's final show...
Jack, I think the sound man is trying to get your attention.
Oh, yes, he is. What is it, Twombly?
Well, this is the last show of the season, and all my relatives is listening in.
Well, that's nice.
No, it ain't. All they're hearing is people talking. They want to hear sound effects.
Look, Twombly.
Well, a guy imposes on all his friends and relatives and gets them to listen to this program, and what do you hear? Yakety, 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 yakety.
Look,
you may not know it, but in Canoga Park, I'm a big man.
For heaven's sake, Twombly, there are sound effects at the end of the show.
Yeah, but all you got is ordinary ones, like a knock on the door, a telephone rings. I want something complicated that'll let me show my artistry.
But look...
I like them dramatic shows. Can't you do a show like a Tale of Two Cities? Tis a far, far better thing I do than I have ever did before. Goodbye. That's the guillotine.
Look, Twombly, we're doing a radio show, and you'll come in with your sound effects only when you hear your cue. So just keep quiet and listen.
Yes, sir.
Now, where were we? Oh, yes, come on, Dennis, let's hear your song.
good, Dennis. Oh, say, Malin. Malin Merrick.
Yes, Jack.
That was really a wonderful arrangement the orchestra had for Dennis's number.
Thanks.
I also want to thank you for the discipline you've brought to the band. I've noticed during the last few weeks, right up to tonight's final program, the boys have been behaving much better. And they all... What was that?
Remley fell off his stool.
Couldn't quite make it to the end of the season, right? Well, isn't anybody going to pick him up?
No, Jack. We usually let him lie there during the summer. The rest does him good.
Well, okay, let him stay there, but I want him up when we go back on the air next fall, you see. And Malin, rub a little cheese on his face so the mice will keep him shaved. Imagine Remley falling off his stool like that.
To the rest of the world, it might have been Remley who fell, but in Canoga Park, they know it was me.
Not from that reading, they didn't. Now, look, Quambley, this is your last warning. I don't want any more talk from you. You're a sound man, so all we want out of you are sound effects when we give you the cue.
Yes, sir.
Tell me, Malin, what are the other boys in the band going to do this summer? Huh?
Well, most of them are taking summer jobs, all except Bagby. He's going on a pleasure cruise to Hawaii.
Oh, Charlie's going to take an expensive vacation like that. Isn't he going to work at all?
What does he have to work for? He hasn't even spent half the money he got from that Brinks job in Boston.
Malin, how can you say a thing like that about Bagby on the air, even in jest? Now the police will come and get him. Quambley, stop that. And what are you bowing for?
Right now they're applauding in Canoga Park.
Look, I don't want any more of your silly talk and sound effects. You just give us the sound effects on the right cue and that's all.
Yes, sir.
Say, Jack.
Yes, Malin.
Since this is our last program, the boys in the band chipped in and bought you a little gift, and they selected Sammy the drummer to make the presentation. Come over here, Sammy.
Okay, Malin. Mr. Benny, on behalf of all the boys in the band, it gives me great pleasure to present you with this token of our esteem.
Well, thanks, Sammy. Thanks a lot, fellas. Let me see what it is. Oh, isn't that nice? It has my initials on it, too.
Yeah.
Just what I've always wanted. A monogrammed ice cube. Gee, thanks, fellas. And remember, at the start of next season, don't call me. I'll call you. Just wait. I think we better get on with the program. I want to leave early so I can get a quick start. Who can that be? Come in.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Why, Mr. Kitzel.
Mr. Benny, pardon my intrusion, but I just dropped in to say goodbye.
Well, that was very nice. And wait a minute. How'd you know I was going away?
Of this I was ignorant, but I know I'm going away.
Oh, really? Where?
I'm going to Europe to visit my relations.
Oh, that's wonderful. What country do they live in?
Ireland.
Ireland?
Yeah.
Gosh, Mr. Kitzel, I never knew you were of Irish descent.
Just on my mother's side. Full-blooded, I'm not.
Oh, I see.
And then from there, I'm going for a full week to Paris.
Paris?
This is in France.
I know. Tell me, Mr. Kitzel, while you're there, are you going to see some of those Paris nightclub shows?
I'm planning to go every single night.
Every night, but the whole show is in French. You won't understand a thing.
Mr. Benny, I'm going for looking, not listening. You know, this I understand in any language.
I know.
And then while I'm over there, and since it'll be summer, I think I'll swim the English Channel.
Swim the English Channel?
That's right.
But, Mr. Kitzel, you can't try a swim like that on the spur of the moment. You gotta train and train and train.
Keep
now living on track 5 for Anaheim, Wasosa, and Coog.
Now, Twombly, cut that out.
Among us.
Now, look, that's the last straw. Another interruption like that, and I'll have you fired. Now, I don't care how strong your union is. I'm sorry I lost my temper, Mr. Kitzel, but this has been going on all day.
You did your right. I was just leaving anyway.
Oh, well, goodbye and bon voyage.
Thank you. Mickey McGuire was a man of fire, and he came from County Cork.
Now, kids, no use writing anything. They read anything they want. Now, kids, as I was telling you, I want to get an early start on my vacation trip, so I'm going to call...
Oh, wait a minute, Jack. Wait a minute. Hold it.
Oh, what is it, Don?
Well, before you leave, I want you to hear the commercial the sportsman and I have prepared for the last show.
Is it a good one, Don?
Yes, it's the boys' farewell to you because they're going to Europe.
Oh, to Europe, like Mr. Kitzel. All right, fellas, let's hear the song.
Bye-bye, Benny. We'll miss you, Mr. Benny. Dry that tear from your eye. When we're in London, we'll try not to walk in the fog. It's almost as bad as our own L.A. smog. Bye-bye, Benny. Thanks for the new halfpenny we have borrowed to spend. We'll buy some crumpets and tea if the crumpets are for free, but somehow Benny will get by.
Don, I must compliment you and the boys on that commercial. It was really swell.
Well, thanks very much, Jack. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, but don't you think it would have been even better if I had accompanied the boys on my violin?
No.
Don, why not?
Well, Jack, I don't like you playing your violin during the commercial because we sell cigarettes.
What's that got to do with it?
People can't smoke when they're holding their noses.
Well, another witticism from my chubby little chum. I suppose you thought that was funny too, eh, Don?
Yes, I did, Jack.
Well, Don, at this point, I think it's only fair to remind you of that old Chinese proverb, which goes, and I quote, when employee make joke about employer, then E soon find out that fire M. So watch it, kiddo. Dennis, what are you laughing at?
I just got it. People can't smoke when they're holding their noses.
Dennis, you're an idiot.
Only on my father's side. Full-blooded, I'm not.
All right. Now, everybody keep quiet. I want to call up and have my car sent around to the front of the studio so I can get right home.
Say, Mabel, what is it, Gertrude? Mr. Benny's line is flashing. Yes, Mr. Benny. Yeah, I'll tell him. Goodbye. So what does he want? He wants I should call the parking lot to let them know he's leaving soon so they can get his car ready. Well, ain't he an eager beaver? What's he in such a hurry about to get his car? He always does that. It takes 15 minutes to get the boiler hot. You know, Gertrude, I don't understand him. He's such a big star. Why does he drive around in such an old jalopy? Well, that's because he's so sentimental. Oh, he loves the car, and I love money. But I can't understand why he keeps saving all the time. Hasn't he heard that famous expression, you can't take it with you? He tried it all right. But he thinks he's worked out a system to get around it. Well, how? He had a tailor sew pockets in his skin. Well, everybody can kid Jack about being cheap, but I happen to know he has a generous side, too.
What makes you say that?
Well, the other night we were having dinner at the Sportsman's Lodge, and you know how most people only leave 10% of the bill for a tip?
Uh-huh.
Well, Jack insisted I leave 15.
Oh, how nice. Hello? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Benny. The line to the parking lot is busy. I'll keep trying and tell him you want the car. It'll be ready by the time you are.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Gertrude. Well, kids, the program is nearly over, and it looks like we've come to the end of another season. At a time like this... Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
What is it, Rochester?
Nothing important. I just want you to know that I've got all your things packed and ready for your trip.
Good. You put in all that stuff in my medicine chest?
Yes, sir. I packed your nerve tonic, stomach tonic, liver tonic, blood tonic, and tonic tonic.
Tonic tonic? What have I got that for?
In case any of the other tonics feel run down, that's what they take.
Well, Rochester, did you pack my new gray suit?
No, sir, it's dirty. I'm going to send it to the cleaners.
But I want to wear it tomorrow in Las Vegas.
But, boss, that gray suit doesn't give enough contrast with your golden curly locks.
Well, Rochester, what can I do? I don't have any other new suit.
I know, but you got other locks.
Well, all right.
Now, tell me, Mr. Benny, do you want me to pack your brown spike shoes or your two-tone spike shoes?
I don't want any spike shoes. I'm not going to play golf in Las Vegas.
I know, but if you win something, you'll want to get out fast.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Pack the brown one.
Yes, sir. And, Mr. Benny, I think you ought to get some new luggage. This bag you got here is old and it looks awful.
Rochester, I'll have you know that bag is genuine cowhide.
Oh, boss, this is cowhide?
Well, only on its mother's side. Full-blooded, it's not. Now, Rochester, I hope you memorized that nightclub act I taught you. As your agent, I've arranged for an audition for you at the Flamingo, and I think I can get you booked in there.
I know, and I appreciate it. Only
what?
Well, I read that contract I've got with you.
What about it?
Ain't I supposed to get the 90%?
Rochester, I'm putting the rest of that money away for you to use as a nest egg.
Well, push the hen off. I'm hungry.
Stop worrying about it. You'll get everything that's coming to you. Now, I'll be back as soon as the program's over, and we'll leave right after dinner.
Okay. Goodbye.
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 For heaven's sake, Twombly, hang up the phone.
You told me you didn't want no more sound effects.
Of all the silly, go ahead and play, Malin.
Jack will be back in just a minute.
Ladies and gentlemen, although this is called the Jack Benny Program, I'd like to say that its success is due to the competent people I have working with me, my wonderful cast, the great supporting players I have, my producer, my engineer, my sound man, my capable writers, my fine musicians.
How can you read that stuff? Doesn't it make you sick?
Good night, folks. See you in the fall.
Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsburg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Hal Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks.
And
And that was indeed the last Jack Benny show from May 22nd, 1955. And that is almost going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault. A little right now from Joe Sample. Joe Sample there. Well, he wasn't that little at the time. He has since passed away, as a matter of fact. Called In All My Wildest Dreams. That is going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault installment. And, of course, if you like the mystery type stuff, we do that on Sunday night between 10 o'clock and 12 midnight or somewhere in that. Maybe it's 9 o'clock. I don't even know anymore. But on that note, we're going to head out the door, have yourself a good one, and we'll talk to you in a week or sooner. See ya.
broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.